Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, April 14th, 2016. Riek Machar places conditions on his arrival next week.
These are concerns from our side, but he must take oath once he arrives, the day he arrives, the same day. That the state of emergency has to be lifted, must be lifted, and that even the transition should be verified by citizens.
And opposition members are detained after yesterday's arrival of a top SPLM-IO official.
That is unfortunate and should not recur to them, because peace means freedom to express your mind, to gather together, to express yourself, even if it means you disagree.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. With just days to go before First Vice President-designate Riek Machar is due to arrive back in Juba, disagreements still linger between the government and the SPLM-IO over how Machar will be welcomed back to the capital. Waki Simon Mudu reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLM-IO spokesman William Ezekiel says his party's hopes are that their leader, Riek Machar, will still arrive in Juba next Monday, but says his group and the government have still not worked out the arrangements for Machar's reception. He says Machar wants to be sworn in as soon as he arrives.
These are concerns from our side, but he must take oath once he arrives, the day he arrives, the same day. That the state of emergency has to be lifted, must be lifted, and that even the transition should be verified by CITISAM.
CITISAM stands for the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangements Monitoring Mechanism, the body charged with the monitoring security arrangements as per the peace agreement. Ezekiel says his party is not yet satisfied with the demilitarization of Juba as required by the peace agreement. According to the security arrangements under the peace deal, a sizable number of government troops should remain in Juba during the transitional period, while the remainder are to be redeployed 25 kilometers outside of Juba. Information Minister Michael Makwe insists the redeployment has been completed, but SPLM-IO officials say that has not yet been confirmed by the CITISAM, and they want that confirmation before Machar arrives. Officials with the JEMEC or the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission were not available for comment. Makwe told the South Sudan in Focus that it is not the responsibility of the SPLM-IO to manage Machar's reception in Juba.
Should the first vice president designate arrive on Monday, he will be received at the official level at the airport, and after reception at the official level at the airport, he will proceed to his residence, where he will be receiving people, where he will be holding meetings. And the second day, that is day two, he will go to J1 to go and take oath of office. After the oath of office, he will proceed to his office. That will constitute the end of day two.
Ezekiel says the SPLM-IO's arrangements remain in place and there will be no compromise on those plans.
On our side, we oppose and we reject this idea for the leader to come, the first vice president designate, to go and again comes in the morning for a swearing in. This is unfair. And why should we make just one occasion, two occasions? Why should we want to waste resources more than we can do it just in a one day?
In addition, the SPLM-IO expects Machar to address a rally upon his arrival, something the government has said will not happen. Machar had been scheduled to return to Juba on April 12, but missed that deadline, saying he had not finalized the arrangements with his leadership on his arrival. Failure by both parties over security arrangements have delayed the full implementation of the peace agreement. It remains to be seen whether Machar will arrive on Monday. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Meanwhile, the SPLM-IO is calling on the government to release its officials arrested on Tuesday. They were mobilizing Juba residents to receive the group's deputy leader, Alfred Ladu Gore. At the same time, the government was trying to tamp down any excitement over the arrival of the SPLM-IO officials. SPLM in opposition spokesman William Ezekiel says 19 members are being detained at an unknown location. A government spokesman says the detained officials were causing havoc and will be prosecuted. Magume Davis Wakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
William Ezekiel describes the arrest of party members as a violation of the August peace agreement since they were not breaking the law.
They were calling on the people of Juba to turn up and welcome Ladu Gore at the airport. That was their message only. So the arrest itself occurred in Jebel Serbok in Juba when our team was announcing to the public.
Deputy SPLM IO leader Alfred Ladu Gore says he's disappointed the party members were arrested.
That is unfortunate and should not recur, shouldn't, because peace means our people should be free to talk their minds. Peace means freedom to express your mind, to gather together, to express yourself, even if it means you disagree. But it is a very unfortunate incident. I deplore it and I condemn it.
South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwey says the SPLM-IO members were trying to stir up trouble.
When the people went to receive Alfred Gore, we had made the necessary security precautions so that we don't give room for any anti-peace to disrupt whatever. In the course of doing that, they refused to listen. They did not respect the order which was set in place, so they were arrested. In the course of arrest, one of them was found with a pistol. We don't know what were his intentions and how did he get that pistol.
Makwey says it is the government's responsibility to protect its citizens, including the opposition, and there will be consequences for those who do not follow orders.
They must respect law and order. They have come to a place where there is law and order. We will take them to the court. We will bring them before books.
Ezekiel says SPLM-IO officials have not been able to speak to their detained colleagues, including for women, since they were arrested.
We hear that they are in security headquarters. Some say now they have been transferred to somewhere else. But these are unconfirmed, these are unreliable, and these are not official. We don't have access to them. We are 100% worried about their whereabouts and even about their life. We have some of them who are sick, who take medication every morning, and now they are not getting it.
Ezekiel appealed to government officials to release their colleagues immediately and said both the government and the opposition should be focused on implementing the peace agreement.
We believe that this agreement is a way forward to resolve the issue of South Sudan, the issue of conflict in South Sudan. We believe that without this agreement, South Sudan will be in chaos. That is why we are sticking to the implementation of the peace agreement to the letter.
Ezekiel says they are working with the government to finalize the program of how to receive opposition leader Vice President designate Riek Machar, who is expected to arrive in Juba early next week. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
A member of the U.S. House of Representatives is drafting new legislation to try to help former lost boys and girls brought to the U.S. in the early 2000s. Democrat Karen Bass of the Western State of California says the proposed bill would provide educational support to the lost boys and girls and would help finance their trips back to South Sudan so they can help rebuild their country.
A number of these young men and women, because obviously they are not boys and girls anymore, they have tremendous accomplishments, several PhDs, people with master's degrees. You know, they have settled and acclimated here very well. The issue is, though, is that they're looking at their homeland that's in constant distress, you know, wars, civil wars back and forth, and peace agreements that are broken over and over again. And so many of them are questioning whether or not it's time to go home.
What do you see as the role of Congress in addressing the issues that the former lost boys and girls, who, of course, as you say, are now men and women, what do you see as the role of Congress in addressing the issues that they experience here in the U.S.?
Part of our thinking is to assist the young men and women who are interested in returning home, to assist them in that effort. And so perhaps they would go home for a visit, or perhaps they would go home to resettle there or go there for a period of time. And so those are the issues that we are examining and looking to have some incentives to help them make that journey. And so we are considering doing legislation, and looking at the role that the federal government might play is definitely what will be discussed in the next couple of days.
Do you mind at all speaking a little more specifically about some of the plans that you have regarding the South Sudanese diaspora? As you just said, I know that your office has been working very hard on this issue, but what can the public expect from your office in the coming weeks and the coming months regarding the South Sudanese diaspora?
My office is looking at introducing legislation that would essentially call on the federal government to assist the young men and women in returning home. And we'll also look at some educational support. And so we played a distinct role in bringing them here, and it seems to me only appropriate that, number one, we look back and evaluate where are they now. I mean, it was several hundred young people that came here, some as children and some as young adults. How are they doing? Congress should examine where they are, what has happened to them, and if any of them are interested in returning home, then we should play a role in facilitating that.
We are less than a week away from the planned arrival of Rebel Leader Riek Machar, and of course this has been heavily anticipated. Your thoughts on this, what does this mean for the country going forward, and does this change the conversation that members of Congress like yourself will have on South Sudan?
Well, if in fact Machar does return, and if things are peaceful, then I think it will be a tremendous sign that maybe the warring factions will actually adhere to the latest peace agreement. And so all eyes are set on Juba. But I do have to tell you that there have been many times before when Machar was supposed to return and didn't. And so I think everybody will be waiting to see this time if he actually does go home.
That's U.S. Congresswoman Karen Bass speaking to us yesterday from her office in Washington, D.C. A Sierra Leone government official says the country remains on high alert following news recently of new Ebola flare-ups in neighboring Guinea and Liberia. A woman died of Ebola in the Liberian capital Monrovia on March 31st after arriving from Guinea, where a fresh Ebola outbreak has killed 8 people since mid-March. Presidential spokesman Abdoulaye Bairatai says President Ernest Bai Koroma has called for increased surveillance of all border crossing points to prevent a resurgence. But Bairatai tells VOA's James Buddy that Sierra Leone will not close its borders because that won't help reduce the Ebola crisis.
All indication from WHO advisory is that once Ebola has struck any country, there is always a tendency for it to repeat itself. And we have seen a demonstration of that when we had some reoccurrence a few months back. So that is why this time around, when Guinea recorded new cases in less than a week or two, Liberia recorded the same. So for us, as part of taking proactive measures, the president has to came out with a very strong press release that all border crossing points between Sierra Leone and neighboring Guinea, we are now intensifying the surveillance programs there, and the military has been requested to go and support just so that we'll be able to enforce the health and medical compliances we put in place.
Does this mean that your government is going to close its border with Guinea and Liberia?
For us, closing the border is not an immediate solution. The reason being, all the epidemiological advice vis-a-vis the Ebola virus is saying closing the border is not a panacea. And that, of course, we have seen when Liberia closed its border, when Guinea recorded new cases. But even though they closed the border, they still had the Ebola. For us, we are more intensifying our surveillance teams at the medical level, and also enforcing all the medical IPCs, that is the infection and prevention controls, so that people coming in and out of the border, we must be able to take your temperature. Once you are presenting with any of the symptoms of Ebola, who will isolate you at the clinics we have established at the border level, just so that we don't take chances to compromise where we have gone, particularly at a time when the government is entering the second phase in its post-Ebola recovery agenda.
Abdoulaye Barate is spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with James Buddy from the capital, Freetown. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. New efforts to eradicate guinea worm cases in South Sudan. Find out what they are when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most unusual thing you ever ate?
With sour milk. Sometimes in our community they don't boil. It's come sour. Summer is dirty. They put some charcoal to bring a good smell. But to me, it's not good. It's unusual.
Frog legs. Because in Ghana, nobody actually eats frog legs. That was quite unusual.
The most unusual thing I've ever eaten is guinea fowl. It didn't really taste good, so I had to spew it out.
Nigeria is a country that we eat anything at all, anything breathing we eat. So me, in my own tribe, and particularly the unusual thing that I've ever ate, you will not believe it, is I've eaten crickets.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. The Carter Center and the Ministry of Health say more work lies ahead to eradicate guinea worm cases in South Sudan. To that end, Carter Center officials have increased a cash reward from 500 to 5,000 South Sudanese pounds for anyone with the disease who willingly reports to a health center or surveillance officer. As Michael Atit reports for VOA from WOW, the Carter Center wrapped up a three-day training session today for mobilizers in WOW.
The Carter Center is training county and Payam guinea worm eradication program supervisors on surveillance techniques, community education, and documentation in conjunction with the reward program. Matthew Kraus, a Carter Center guinea worm eradication program specialist in South Sudan, says the higher cash reward will encourage people to report guinea worm cases quickly.
This year in 2016, the cash rewards have been increased to 500 to 5,000, the 250 to 2,500, and the 100 to 1,000. So previously, in 2015, the rewards were 500 pounds for a person with an unemerged worm that was coming forward, 250 pounds for a worm that had already emerged from the person's body coming forward, and 100 pounds for an informer.
Kraus says he's optimistic the more robust reward program will soon eradicate guinea worm cases in South Sudan.
To record zero levels means we have to have thorough documentation at all levels in all areas, and mainly that we detect all cases of guinea worm and ensure transmission is broken so that we can say that there are no cases in the country. Then for the next years coming, before the certification process, making sure that we have documentation that can prove that the surveillance structure is strong and that there are no cases of guinea worm in South Sudan.
Guinea worm disease is conducted by drinking stagnant water that contains the larvae of the parasite. Once inside a human host, the larvae can grow into worm that can stretch up to 3 feet long. They eventually burst through the skin, causing extreme pain. If a person infected with guinea worm enters a pool of water, the worm could release millions of eggs and disease could spread. Last year, a 12-year-old girl who lives in Odichi Payam, around 50 kilometers north of the state capital WOW, was diagnosed with a painful parasitic disease. Local surveillance officers say there are cultural norms which hamper efforts to eradicate the disease. They say South Sudan communities still believe guinea worm can never be eradicated, and some South Sudanese who suffer from guinea worm often choose traditional herbs over modern medicines. John Bo Manuat is the Carter Center's Guinea Worm Eradication Program County Surveillance Officer in Juriva County.
The challenge is that they tell us that this thing had come out and then I cut. Okay? Another challenge is they say that they have traditional medicine, which there is a worm so that the worm will not come out. So it's are some challenges because these are the traditional norms that cannot be avoided.
Peter Arcangelo, the Wawi State Guinea Worm Eradication Program Manager, says in order to eradicate the disease, such cultural norms must be eliminated. He says surveillance officers have to educate people about the importance of early reporting.
We want these people to go on health awareness in schools, churches, market, and any gathering places on the new information so that at the end we get a world certificate. South Sudan still need 3 years to attain a zero case.
Last year, the Carter Center, named after former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, founded the center, reported only 5 cases in South Sudan, which they say it is a sign that they are on the verge of eradicating the disease. The Carter Center is leading efforts to eradicate guinea worm cases in Africa. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
The Bring Back Our Girls movement marched through Nigeria's capital today to mark the 2-year anniversary of the kidnapping of the Chibok girls. A new video released on the eve of the anniversary purports to show 15 of the girls alive as recently as December and has raised hopes that they still can be rescued. VOA's Chris Stein has more from Lagos.
The camera pans shakily over the girls' faces as they recite their names and where they were abducted from. The video, which was obtained by CNN, is the first time any of the 219 abducted girls have been seen publicly since Boko Haram released a propaganda video featuring a group of them shortly after their capture in 2014. The kidnappings from the government secondary school in Chibok drew global protests. Allies, including the United States, offered to help Nigeria find them. So far, they've turned up nothing. Yana Galang is the mother of one of the abducted girls who has seen the video.
Yes, they are all girls.
Her daughter, Rifkatu Delam, was not among the girls in the video, Galang said. She declined to comment further. Minister of Information and Culture Lai Mohammed said he questions the authenticity of the video. In the video, one girl claims to be speaking on December 25th of last year. Mohammed said he found that hard to believe, since many of the girls hadn't changed in appearance during their months in captivity. He also said the government has received numerous false leads about the girls' whereabouts, including a similar video they obtained last July. The video isn't the only evidence that the girls are still alive. Yakubun Keke, chairman of the abducted Chibok girls' parents' movement for rescue, says parents of two of the girls have recently received phone calls from their daughters' cell phone numbers. But when they called back, the voice on the other end was an unidentified man who told the parents the phone belonged to his wife. As residents of the town gathered at the ruins of the school to mark the 2-year anniversary, Chibok elder Ayuba Alamson said many had taken heart in the girls' appearance in the video.
People have been offering prayers right yesterday and today to see that we see these girls alive.
Others were wary. Philip Yama, whose sister Margaret Yama was abducted, says he's heard too many rumors about the girls since the abduction to take the video at face value.
I can't believe it until I saw these girls with my own eyes.
In the 2 years since the abduction, Chibok has changed, in many ways for the worse. The government has demolished the town's school, and despite promises to replace it, has not built a new one. 18 parents of kidnapped girls have since passed away, Nkeke said. They lost their lives to Boko Haram, or ailments related to the stress of waiting for the return of their missing daughters. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Opposition politicians in Chad have claimed fraud during Sunday's presidential election, but African Union observers say the poll, while flawed, was fair. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more for VOA from N'Djamena.
African Union observers of Chad's presidential election say despite irregularities, overall Sunday's vote was peaceful and credible. Former Malian president and head of the AU observer mission to Chad, Dion Kunda Traore, said issues included the late opening of polling stations in hard-to-access areas and poorly trained polling officers.
Nous n'avons pas d'appréhension particulière.
He says they don't know what will happen after the proclamation of the results, but the AU is urging all candidates and their followers to accept the verdict. He says those who are not satisfied with the results should contest them in the courts. Kamalo Salifu Turabi, leads the Pan-African Institute for Election Assistance Observer Mission.
Nous avons évalué les indicateurs possibles qui nous permettent d'estimer le taux de
participation. He says despite irregularities, voter participation is estimated at 85%. The opposition says there was fraud, including ballot stuffing. Chadian President Idris Deby is widely expected to win a fifth term in office. The country faces continued threats from the Nigerian terror group Boko Haram. Social issues like the high cost of living sparked unprecedented protests in the run-up to the poll. Five rights activists have been in jail for the last 3 weeks. Chad has cracked down on the media, in particular the foreign press, since the vote. The French broadcaster TV5 Monde says its crew was forbidden from filming. Mahamat Abdoulaye Issa, Chad's official in charge of press accreditation, says journalists were not authorized to report as the country waits for results.
Après l'élection du 10, certains organes de presse à travers des reporters voudraient rester sur place attendre.
He says journalists wishing to report on non-election related issues must apply for new accreditation to remain in Chad. He says that does not infringe on press freedom. The Electoral Commission has 2 weeks from the April 10 vote to declare results. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, N'Djamena.
And here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayanne. First Vice President-designate Riek Machar's expected arrival in Juba on Monday appears to be in question. That's because the government and the SPLM-IO are still bickering over how Machar will be welcomed back to the capital. SPLM-IO spokesman William Ezekiel says his party hopes Machar will still arrive in Juba on Monday, but disagreements remain over the arrangements for Machar's reception and when he'll be sworn in. He says Machar must take the oath of office on Monday. The government says that will happen on Tuesday. Ezekiel also says his party is not yet satisfied with the demilitarization of Juba under terms of the peace agreement. The SPLM-IO is calling on the government to release its officials arrested on Tuesday. They were mobilizing Juba residents to receive the group's deputy leader, Alfred Ladugore, at a time when the government was trying to tamp down any excitement over his arrival. SPLM spokesman Ezekiel says 19 members are being detained at an unknown location. A government spokesman insists that the detained officials were causing havoc and will be prosecuted. And finally, the Carter Center and the Ministry of Health say that eradication of the guinea worm cases in South Sudan is progressing, but more must be done. Carter Center officials have increased a cash reward from 500 to 5,000 South Sudanese pounds for anyone with a disease who is willingly reporting to a health center or surveillance officer. The Carter Center wrapped up a 3-day training session today for mobilizers in Wau. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Public Enemy by Ross Corby.
Yes, that's the eye, the king of Israel, seen most high Jehovah, Rastafari. And you don't know any time righteousness and consciousness come forward. The people always want to kill it down, seen. Bless the most high. Original Ross Corby, life and direct. So Sudan is liberated. Yeah. Watch it.
They call me a public enemy because I'm fighting my enemies. Public enemy because I'm fighting my enemies.
Say, I'm not a Lebanese, a Japanese, a Chinese. I'm proud to be a Southern Sudanese.
They call me a public enemy because I'm fighting my enemies. Public enemy because I'm fighting.
Call me a criminal. Don't forget.
before you make your judgment.
We've been listening to Ross Corby with the song Public Enemy. I'm Ayan Biora in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. How are we gonna build this new